Yeah! Welcome to the Compass Podcast, featuring Chris Chandro and the Compass team. We hope this message is just for you.
We are in the last week of a selfie series, and what we wanted to do is we wanted to talk about the story of a guy named Gideon and tie it into our lives and into really the social media aspects of our lives, because for all of us, social media has some sort of connection into our lives. There's some ways that social media interacts your life, whether you're a Facebook addict, a Twitter fiend, or maybe you're one of those, you know, those old people and you're like, I don't understand what all these kids are doing with this, and it just makes you mad and you want to throw the remote. Social media affects our lives. And so we decided we're going to talk about that and see how does God want us to interact with social media? How does he want it to affect our lives? And how does he want us to use it to affect the world that we live in? And so every week we've been showing a slide or having you guys tweet something. So everybody pull your phone out with me real quick. Just get your phone out. Get ready with Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, because we're going to do one last little selfie, you know, all church type deal today. So guys, bring up that slide. I want you to take a picture of this. This is actually one of our core values at Compass. This is a non-negotiable for us, that church should be fun. And I thought for our last picture or tweet or Facebook post that we put up for our selfie series, church should be fun, should be one of those things that we share. So man, take a picture of that, hashtag Compass Church. Get that up on social media. Here's what is so great about this. We have a couple friends. We've heard some people who go to other churches, but they just follow Compass on Twitter. And every Sunday, it's like, oh my gosh, I don't know what you guys are doing, but you're taking over my Twitter feed every stinking Sunday. Just quit it. Quit it already. So here's the thing. And when you talk about social media and when you talk about how we use it, we're really telling a story of our lives with social media. I mean, I know I am, at least. When I use Facebook or Twitter, you know, no matter what I'm posting, I really am, I'm telling the story of my life. So, you know, for the last 2 weeks, I've seen two awesome movies. I saw Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which just, it blew my butt off. It was so good. I loved it. And then this week I saw Guardians of the Galaxy, which I, you know, picked my jaw up off the floor. I loved both of those movies. And when I see a movie or something I love, I got to share that thing on social media. I got to post it. But really, I'm telling the story of my life, because here's what I'm saying. I'm telling the world I like good things. And so if you like people who like good things, you'll like this. If you don't like those movies, that's fine. You can post on your social media, I didn't care for Planet of the Apes or Guardians of the Galaxy, and you're basically telling the world, I don't like good things. I like things that are bad. And that's the narrative in the story of your life. But we tell stories with social media. It's the narrative of our lives that we want people to know and believe. We craft it and we control it. Think about this. When you post pictures on Facebook, there's these two categories of pictures really on Facebook. There are your photos, and those are the pictures that you put up, right? Those are the pictures that you post, that you control, that you edit and filter, and then there are the photos of you. Now, the your photos, they're the ones that are really good. So bring up this first picture. I'm going to just share something from my Facebook. This is one of my photos. Now, this was our very, very first baptism service a while ago. We were, you know, we baptized people in a little kiddie pool, and that's my son, Calvin. And that this picture to me is, man, if I wanted to create a narrative of my life, this is it. It's just me, the dad, who loves Compass, and just, I love this. This picture just tells such a great story. And if this is the story of my life, I'm great. This has been a profile picture of mine. I'm just going to tell the truth. Like, you're going to see this picture all over Compass promotional materials. I'm the pastor. I reserve the right to do whatever I want. And so this picture is my story. And if I want to tell a story, this is it. So this is like the your photos. Now, but there's these photos of you. Now, these are the photos that other people put up that you don't necessarily control. You can't say whether they're up or not. Go ahead and bring up this next one. This is more the photos of me. Okay, so while the first picture tells the story of a guy who loves his son and loves his church and just loves the Lord, this picture tells the story of someone who likes to murder children by drowning them in kids' pools. This is not a picture you are going to see on our marketing materials at Compass, especially with, like, look at the gleeful look on my face. It's like, die. So that's the difference. Like, the first one is, man, I craft and control that. I post the story, the narrative of my life. And then there's these pictures, these stories that get out that we can't control. And we don't want these things on our social media. We don't want to tell those stories. Listen to this. How many of you have an iPhone, an Apple product? Yeah, most of you, because If you like good things, again, you like apple. And if you don't like good things, I apologize for that, even though it's true. So this is like, check this out. Siri is the, you know, the Apple voice. And you take your phone and you're like, Siri, tell me this. And Siri comes through and she tells you, you know, directions or tells you where to go to a good restaurant, or Siri will play your music. And so if you grab your phone and you say, Siri, tell me a story, you know, if the first couple times you ask Siri to do it, she'll say, I don't have anything to tell, or, you know, I don't have any good stories, stuff like that, really evasive answers. But if you keep asking Siri, she will tell you a long story of her life. And this is what's crazy. Even Siri controls the narrative, because buried in the story that she tells a story about herself. And she says this: one lovely day, this is Siri talking, by the way. One lovely day, Siri got a new job as a personal assistant at Apple. And that was very exciting. People said, oh, Siri, you're so smart and so funny too. Soon everyone was talking about Siri, and there were stories and songs and even books about Siri. Siri liked that. You see, when Siri tells a story about Siri, Siri's great. Siri never tells the story about how she gave you bad directions, or how she, you know, auto-corrected a word to sound something like it was totally inappropriate when you're trying to tell your mom something cute. You know, Siri never tells those stories. She's always controlling her narrative. She wants you to know how good and special she is. We even control the narrative of our history too. We look back ourselves at things that we've done, whether, you know, good or bad, and we can cast ourselves as a hero, and we can remember things in ways that maybe weren't the most accurate. And I got a movie clip I want to share with you guys that'll illustrate that. So go ahead and play that, guys.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over them mountains? Yeah, coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt. No doubt in my mind. You better believe things would have been different. I'd have gone pro. In a heartbeat. I'd be making millions of dollars and living in a big old mansion somewhere, you know, soaking it up in a hot tub with my soulmate.
Back in 82, I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
Watch this. What the heck are you doing?
That's what I'm talking about.
So I didn't need to include the steak. That was just a bonus for everyone. Whether we use social media to tell the story of our lives, or whether we do it by throwing a steak at someone's face, we are trying to control the narrative of our lives. We want to tell a story with our lives. And there are sections and chapters of our story that we want people to hear and want people to know about. You know, me baptizing my son with this big smile on my face. And then there's sections and chapters we don't want people to know about, and that's me choking a boy and letting him drown in a pool while I laugh. You know, we want to control that narrative. And today, we're going to continue to look at the story of Gideon. And we're going to talk about a story that I'm willing to bet that most of you have never heard. And really, we're going to tell a story today that Gideon wishes you didn't know about a story that Gideon wants you to know about. So follow me with this. Let's recap Gideon over the last several weeks. We've talked about his life. We found Gideon at the beginning of this series. He was hiding out in a wine press, which is a pit in the ground where people crush grapes to make wine. And he was trying to hide food because the nation of Israel for the last 7 years had been subject to the Midianites, this neighboring nation who would come in every time the Israelites had a crop or their livestock was mature. The Midianites would sweep in and they would take their food, you know, like a bug's life. They come, they eat, they leave. And for the last 7 years, that's what the Midianites have been doing. And they're using military force to steal from the Israelites so that they don't have to take care of themselves. And the Israelites are cowards and they're hiding. And Gideon is the biggest coward in all of Israel. Really, he's the smallest member of the smallest, most insignificant family. He has no power, no authority. He has no name, and he's hiding in a pit. And an angel of the Lord appears to Gideon and says, Gideon, mighty hero. And Gideon's like, what are you talking about? I'm a chicken. I'm hiding. But God says, listen, I want you to rescue Israel. I'm going to use you to kick the Midianites out, and Israel's going to be freed because I'm tired of what's happening to the nation of Israel. And so Gideon, again, who is this weak coward hiding, God says, I'm going to do something great in your life. So Gideon says, okay, God, let's do this thing. So Gideon, he goes out into his father's land, and we talked about the story about how Gideon went and tore down all the pagan idols in his father's land because the nation of Israel had taken themselves to worshiping the gods who were in the land before they came into there, and they were worshiping Baal, and they were worshiping this goddess named Asherah, and there were these Asherah poles all over the place. And Gideon, in the middle of the night, because he didn't want to get caught, because he was scared someone was going to get mad at him, he went out in the middle of the night and he tore down all these idols. And then God says this, he says, you know what, build up your army, we're going to do something great. So Gideon builds up this incredible army of like 30,000 men to go out and fight the Midianites. And then God says, okay, wait, I want you to tell anyone who's scared that they can go home. So boom, 20,000 men leave in one shot. So his army's down to 10,000. Gideon's like, well, okay, we can do this. And then God says, you know what? I think your army's still too big. I want you to whittle them down even more. And so Gideon's army is whittled down to 300 men. And Gideon, again, is weak. He's like, I know, God, you want me to do this, but he's weak. And God says, I've got this. And so God sends Gideon's army out. And just miraculously, by the power of God, the Midianites just go into this crazy frenzy because Gideon's army surrounds them. And they just basically yell and hold up torches. And the Midianites freak out. And they all start killing each other and panicking. Gideon's army is just standing there watching the whole thing. They don't even do anything. And the Midianites kill each other, and then they just run off. God gave them an incredible victory. And so last week we talked about how Gideon's army of 300 men chased down the Midianites, but there weren't enough even to just do the mop up. And so Gideon called in some other guys who were a stronger armies really than Gideon was, because again, if you look at the through line of the whole life of Gideon, it's this, Gideon was just weak. But God did something in him. And so he calls in the bigger, tougher guys to do the cleanup. And at the end of this story, we have found that God has moved in Gideon's life in incredible ways. And as a result, the victory has happened for the nation of Israel. The Midianites have been crushed. They have been defeated. Gideon is what God said he was going to be. Gideon is now the hero of Israel. And we pick up our story following at this point, the battle's over. The nation of Israel is looking at Gideon. He is their hero. And in Judges chapter 8, verse 22 through 23, this is what happens. It says, then the Israelites said to Gideon, be our ruler. You and your son and your grandson will be our rulers, for you have rescued us from Midian. But Gideon replied, I will not rule over you, nor will my son. Only the Lord will rule over you. So Gideon does this incredible, amazing thing, and God empowers him to do it. And the Israelites are like, okay, wait a minute. We, at this point, I mean, dude, you should just be our king. Listen, let's make you our king, right? And then when you die, then your son will be our king, and then his son. And man, we'll just be awesome, because if you could do this, then man, you could lead us into anything. Now Gideon, knowing and recognizing his weakness and remembering that God was the one who had done this, he says, no, listen, we as a nation, we follow God. God is our king. God is our leader. And so I'm not going to rule over you. I'm not going to be your king. So we're not going to do that. And he kind of sticks a pin in that and says, that's not going to happen. But the story continues in Judges 8, 24 through 26. And Gideon continues, however, I do have one request, that each of you give me an earring from the plunder that you've collected from your fallen enemies. The enemies, being Ishmaelites, all wore gold earrings. So the Midianites were from this greater kind of race of people called Ishmaelites. And so Gideon, he's saying this. He's like, okay, I'm not going to be your king, but how about this? How about everyone who's gotten any plunder, any gold off these guys, how about everyone just kind of line up? And you just pull off one of those big gold earrings, and you could, you know, just drop it here. And I mean, I could just get a little scratch and take care of me and my family a little bit, because, you know, we did do this. So, you know, how about that? And here's the other thing. The Midianites, as Ishmaelites, they were known for kind of their bling and their jewelry. In fact, historians have kind of recreated an image of what the Midianites probably looked like. Bring that up, guys. So there you go. There's the Midianites. These are who the Israelites are fighting. That's Mr. T. I'm sorry. That was kind of for me. But they all had this jewelry. They all had these earrings that they wore because they were known for it. And Gideon's like, hey, give me some of that. Give me some of your plunder. Give me some of that booty, as pirates would say. I don't know. That just occurred to me. I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. But so they gathered around, and that's what happened. So in Judges 8, 25 through 26, the Israelites gladly, they replied, glad, let's do this thing. So they spread out a cloak, and each one threw in a gold earring that he had gathered from the plunder. The weight of the gold earrings was 43 pounds, not including the royal ornaments and pendants, the purple clothing worn by the kings of Midian, or the chains that were around the necks of their camels. So Gideon, he got one earring from every single person who plundered and chased down the Midianites and just cleaned up after that. So he had like 43 pounds of gold from those earrings. But he also had all this other stuff that he got. He got the gold from the leaders of the Midianites. You know, there's these royal ornaments and pendants and you know, this ornamentation that they put on their camels and horses. And so Gideon had a lot of money. Coming out of this, he did really good for himself. And you think about a guy who had started out so weak, the smallest, weakest member of the weakest family, of the weakest tribe of all of Israel. And again, Israel was weak at this point because the Midianites were crushing them. And now all of a sudden, at the end of this, Gideon's doing pretty well for himself. The people have asked him to be a king. They've asked him to lead them and to rule over them. And now he has a lot of resources. He's got a lot of money. Gideon is doing all right for himself. And this is what happens. This is where things turn a little bit in Judges 8:27. It says that once he got all this stuff, that Gideon made a sacred ephod from the gold, and he put it in Ophrah, his hometown. So now this sentence is one of those sentences that it doesn't make a lot of sense because there's some weird historical stuff, and I'm going to explain that in a second. But this is the sentence that everything in this story turns on. And in fact, I would say this. This is the sentence that everything in Gideon's life shifts on and turns on. You see, Gideon took all of this gold and all this plunder that he had gotten from the Israelites who had conquered the Midianites, and he melted it down, and he crafted this sacred ephod out of gold. Now, an ephod was a piece of clothing that the priests of Israel wore. In fact, bring up this picture. We have a picture of what an ephod looks like. This is this colorful garment here on the creepy mannequin. This is an ephod. And basically what it is this. It's a linen robe that the priests wore in order to minister to the Lord in the tabernacle or in the temple that the Israelites worshiped in. What's incredible about this ephod was laid out in the Jewish laws and ordinances. It was very specific of how it was to be made. It was very specific of the colors that were supposed to be used. It was very specific about what was supposed to go on it. And it was incredibly specific about who it was for and who was supposed to wear it. The only people who were supposed to have these ephods were the priests of the Lord. That was it. Linen robes worn by priests of God, and that's who it was for, and it was explicitly and exclusively for use of ministering to the Lord in the temple or in the tabernacle. And so Gideon, he gets all of this gold, and he, you know, he's the hero at this point. He's done this. The people want him to be king, and, you know, I'm too humble for that, but you know what? I did do all this pretty cool stuff, and I've got all this gold. I need to invest it somehow. You know, I can't just have it laying around. He takes it and he molds it into a gold version of this ephod, of this priestly robe. Now, here's the thing. Gideon, really according to the Jewish law and according to the way that they worshiped the Lord, Gideon had no business making one of these. He had no business owning one of these. He had no business creating one and crafting one outside of the way that Jewish law prescribed they be made. Gideon just said, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do it my way. And really what's happening is Gideon's operating outside the boundaries here. He's won the battle, he's the hero, and he's decided that he's going to operate outside of the rules. And I think what happens is this. In this one single sentence, this one single passage that we're looking at today, we see Gideon, who's been weak this whole time, this whole story, but he's trusted God. God said, I've got you, we're going to do this. And he's been weak, until the battle's been won. And now all of a sudden, Gideon's starting to believe his own hype. Gideon's reading his own press, and he's starting to believe a little bit of it. I mean, he's the hero of Israel. He's the savior of his people. And now all of a sudden, the story that has been written up to that point is starting to undergo some serious rewrites. Because, you know, now it's no longer, you know, here's what's going on in Gideon's mind. He's like, you know, I'm not that weak kid anymore who was hiding out in the wine press. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's not really who I am. You know, I'm not weak like that. And you know what? You know, that guy who was so scared to tear down his dad's idols in the daytime where people could see him, yeah, that really wasn't me either. And you know what? That guy who only had 300 men, and God said, hey, if you're too scared to go attack, you know, you can go peek at those guys and I'll give you proof. You know, that's not Gideon anymore. You know, I wasn't too afraid of that because now look, I'm a hero. I'm the champion. I'm the savior. I'm the savior of Israel. I'm Gideon. And so the story that's been written of Gideon's life up to the point of the victory in this battle, he's starting to say, you know what? Those are pictures of me that somebody else took, but I think it's time for me to post my own photos. I think it's time for me to put up the pictures of myself as Gideon the hero, Gideon the champion, Gideon the guy who everyone wanted to be king, but I turned it down because I'm so humble and I just love the Lord. And you know, this is the me that I want the world to see. Gideon began to believe his own hype. Gideon began to believe the story that he was telling. And in fact, Gideon began to write himself bigger in his own story. And he began to write God smaller in his story. Check this out, Judges 8:27, the second half of that verse. This is what happens. So Gideon makes the sacred ephod, right, out of gold. And he puts it in his hometown. Follow this. But soon, all the Israelites prostituted themselves by worshiping it. And it became a trap for Gideon and his family. I mean, just think about the language here that's used in this. That all of Israel, soon after Gideon makes this golden ephod, really an idol to himself and his own achievements, all of Israel prostituted themselves by again turning from God, by again turning from the Lord who had done all this through Gideon's life, who had saved them, and they begin worshiping it. And it goes even so far as to say this, that this golden idol became a trap for not only Gideon, but for his entire family. You see, Gideon began looking at the staged selfies that he'd taken of himself, right? You know, the ones, because like what happens when you take a selfie? You like hold that button down and you get 50 of them, right? And you take all the duck face ones out and you get rid of those. And you take all the ones where you blink and you take out those. And you take all the ones out where you're not sticking your chin out. So maybe you look a little fatter than you want to look. And then, you know, you get that one or two perfect selfies where like by some miracle, the sun was just setting at the right, you know, angle and the light's just perfect. And you look like, you know, Brad Pitt, at least that's what I think when I look at my selfies, and you're just like, this is me. And Gideon started looking at these selfies that he was taking of himself that were staged, and he started posting those, and he started to ignore those candid shots of himself. He started to ignore the shots where, you know, his shirt was untucked. He started to ignore the shots where, you know, his chin was tucked in and it looked like he had, you know, four chins. And he started to ignore the shots where he had one eye blinked and he didn't look as great as he thought he was. And when he started to look at his selfies instead of his candid shots, it caused him to do things in ways and to put himself in positions and in places that he never had any business being in to begin with. He didn't belong there. He had no place making that robe. It wasn't for him to do. And yet, because he began to see himself as more than he was, because he began to elevate his role in his own story, it caused him to worship his accomplishments instead of God. Gideon forgot that he was weak. Gideon forgot the through line of his entire story up to this point, that he was weak and that God was the one who was strong. And when he took his eyes off of God in his life, when he took his eyes off of God, all of a sudden, everything changed for him, but not just for him. Everything changed for his family too. He began not only to worship God, but he began to worship his accomplishments. This is something, I think that we can apply this to our lives too. I mean, we don't melt down. We don't like keep our quarters in a jar and like, oh, I can't wait to melt down my quarters and, you know, build like a quarter vest and just put that vest up in front of my teeth. Oh, I worship you, quarter vest. You're the best thing in the world. You know, we're not going to do that, but you know, let me just be gut level honest. For me as a pastor of Compass, I take a lot of pride in the fact that this is a brand new church and that God's doing something new through us. And I take a lot of pride in what God's done. You know, our baptism service, how amazing that was, the people whose lives are being changed here. And you know what? It would be easy for me to look at, it'd be easy for me to look at Compass, and maybe even, you know, some of you who are in leadership here at Compass would be able to look at this and just be like, man, Compass is such a great church. Man, our strategies are amazing. Our systems are great. Gosh, our leadership development and training, you know what? We we're kind of rock and roll. We're kind of killing it. You know what? We really ought to, like, maybe we should just write a book. Because I think there's some other churches who should probably do things the way we're doing things. Because, you know, why wouldn't they want to be awesome like us? And, you know, we should probably just have like a Compass conference that, like, maybe some of these like big, you know, huge churches can come to. Because, you know, I think they could probably learn a lot from us. And it would be easy to just get into that mindset and say, you know what? We're doing something pretty awesome. We're doing something great. You know, you might have been one of those people who took part in our 90-day challenge, our 90-day tithing challenge. You know, early in the year, we did this 90-day tithing challenge. And we said this, we challenged our whole church. If you were not a percentage giver, if you didn't tithe, we just said, listen, for the next 90 days, take this challenge to give a percentage of your income, 10% being the ideal, but really just start anywhere with a percentage. And for the next 90 days, tie the percentage to God through Compass. And see what God does, because God says this. He says, test me in this, and I will prove myself to you. And so that's the only time that God says, test me, and so let's test him. Some of you guys probably did that 90-day challenge, right? And can I tell you, I've been in this situation where it's like you say, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to start tithing. And you did it. You started giving. And all of a sudden, God did things in your life. You know, you had new job opportunities. You got a raise. Money started coming in that you didn't expect. Your car didn't break down as much. All of a sudden, when you started giving money away, when you started living open-handed, not holding on to what you had, God started doing this amazing, amazing stuff. And all of a sudden you have more resource and more money and better opportunities and better jobs. And it's like, wow, this is great. And then as those opportunities grew and as you had more resource and more money, you start thinking to yourself, well, you know what? Man, I tell you, this promotion is great, but man, let's be honest, I worked really hard for this thing. And my education played a lot into this. You know, I got that degree. I went back to school to make sure I could get that. And, you know, that was tough. And now that we have this extra resource, this extra money, there's a lot we need to be thinking about. I need to start thinking about retirement. I got to start thinking about putting money away for my kids' college. And man, you know, me being generous was great. But now that I've got more resources, I need to apply, you know, my financial wizardry. And I need to figure this stuff out even better. You know, because listen, that promotion was coming anyway. It was just a matter of time. Maybe this is just a matter of my hard work finally paying off. It did. You know what? I earned this. I did this. I'm so great. Maybe you have been involved in like a really crummy relationship, you know, with a family member, you know, brother, sister. Maybe you have a crummy work relationship. Maybe you were in a crummy dating or a marriage relationship, and it was just hard, and it was tough, and you just begged God. You're like, God, do something, please. God, just save me from this broken, damaged relationship. And he did, and God brought you out of that. And now all of a sudden, now that you're out of it, it's like you're out of the weeds and you can breathe fresh air in your relationships for the first time. And all of a sudden, it's like, man, I learned a lot about myself coming out of that. There's so much about me that I understand. And boy, I could see how, you know, maybe I was a little damaged and I was maybe doing some things I shouldn't have. But you know what? I feel like I've got it together now. And you know, I've got this new relationship opportunity. And you know what? I really think they love me. I think they really care about me. And you know what? Listen, I know that I probably shouldn't be involved in this sexual relationship. And maybe it's sinful and inappropriate. Maybe I shouldn't be doing that. But listen, I learned so much about myself coming out of this last one that I really feel like I'm equipped to step into this new relationship. And I think I can do it right this time. I think, you know, I'll stop making the same mistakes I made in the past because I know how to do this now. So I can tread that thin line of relationship and I can tread that thin line of sinful sexual activity because I can handle this. And you know what? It's the same thing you did in the relationship that came before, and in the relationship that came before, and the relationship that came before that. Because here's what happens when we start to believe our own hype, and when we forget that God is the one who brought us the victory in the first place. This is exactly what happens. History repeats itself. If you can do something in your life and make it work, then you're going to keep doing that. And if you can fool yourself into thinking that you were the one who did it, you're going to keep fooling yourself over and over and over again. History repeats itself. Check this out in Judges 8:33 through 35. This is just the tail end of that. I mean, it's already bad. What's happened? Israel is worshiping this thing that Gideon made instead of God. And we already know that this has become a trap for Gideon and his family. But check this out. Gideon lived for another 40 years. And man, hold on. Before I even read this, let me give you perspective. So this whole like story of Gideon that we've been looking at was maybe a year. Like from the moment that Gideon was hiding out in this wine press till God gave him victory over the Midianites, maybe a year? I mean, it could have been 6 months to 18 months, just a snapshot. Gideon lived for another 40 years. And for 40 years, this golden idol, this statue to his own achievements that he had made, sat in his house for the next 40 years, becoming a trap to him and to his family. And this is what happens. As soon as Gideon died, the Israelites prostituted themselves by worshiping the images of Baal, making Baal-Berith their god. They forgot the Lord their God who had rescued them from all their enemies surrounding them. Here's the thing. The reason all this stuff happened in the first place, the reason the Midianites came in and took over Israel, we covered this early on in the week one, was because what? The Israelites were worshiping other gods. And so God said, listen, if you're going to worship other gods, then I can't protect you anymore. You're making a choice to put yourself in this scenario. And if you're going to worship these foreign gods, then these people have free reign over you. And here they are, 40 years later, the Israelites doing the exact same thing that they were doing when we found Gideon at the very beginning of his story. And get this, nor did the Israelites show any loyalty to the family of Jerubbaal, which was the name they gave Gideon. Think about this. This is interesting too, right? Jerubbaal, this nickname they gave Gideon, they gave him that nickname because he tore down the altars to Baal. It meant basically, in today's terms, the guy who kicked Baal's butt was essentially what that nickname meant. And yet, even as they call him Jerubbaal, they didn't show any loyalty to him or his family as they worshiped Baal, despite all the good that they had done for Israel. So they're worshiping other gods and they've completely forgotten Gideon and his family. They've forgotten. The opportunity that Gideon had to build a legacy for himself, for his family, for his children. And it's all gone. Because Gideon, rather than remembering God's role, started to write himself bigger in his own story. And history repeats itself when we take God out of our story. Listen, when we take God out of our story, I want to promise you this. The mistakes of your past that you have made will happen again. It's a guarantee it will happen again when we take God out of our story. After Gideon died, this is just ugly, but this is just the next thing that happened, right? It's not enough that Israel's worshiping foreign gods and that, they didn't give a rip about Gideon's family anymore. But Gideon died, right? Gideon has 70 sons. He has a bunch of wives and a bunch of concubines because he's forgotten God and forgotten God's ways. And Gideon's son, one of his sons says this. He says, you know what? I should rule Israel after Gideon because Gideon's dead and I really feel like I should be the leader of this family. I feel like I should be the leader of this tribe. And so he does this. He gathers support and he goes to where all the rest of his 70 brothers are and he kills them. So here's the legacy Gideon left behind. By not remembering what God did, his legacy is this, that one of his children murdered all the rest of his children. That's his legacy. A history of violence and pagan worship and pain. Exactly the same thing that Gideon started in is exactly the same thing that he has recreated in the lives of his family. You know, Gideon not only rewrote his story, but he rewrote his children's story. He rewrote his grandchildren's story. And we have that opportunity as well. We can write a legacy for our kids of God's achievements and accomplishments, or we can write a legacy of our own that will be repeated over and over and over again. We can worship the achievements rather than God in our lives because everything good that happened in Gideon's life was gone the second he decided to replace God as the hero of his story with himself. Everything the good that happened in Gideon's short story was the result of the centrality of God in his story. But he took God out of the picture. I'm going to leave you with this last passage. And this is something that Jesus puts in his own words. And I love going to the, Old Testament, the old school stories. And I love what they say about God. But I love how Jesus has a way of putting things into words for us, those of us who follow him, in a way that just, we can hang our hats on this. And this is what Jesus says to us as it relates to this. He says this in John 15, 4 through 5. He says, remain in me and I will remain in you. For a branch cannot produce fruit if it's severed from the vine, and you cannot be fruitful unless you remain in me. Yes, I'm the vine and you are the branches. And those who remain in me and I in them, they will produce much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing. This is what Jesus is saying. He's saying, look, this was the mistake Gideon made. Gideon thought that by being a part of God's story, that qualified him to be the hero of his own. And Gideon missed the point completely. God invited Gideon to be part of what he was doing in the world. God invited Gideon to be an incredible and amazing part of what he was doing in the world. But Gideon didn't remain in God. He didn't stay focused on him. He didn't keep his eyes firmly on the real Savior. And he looked at himself as the hero. And Jesus is saying this to us. He's saying, look, remain in me. Remain in me. Remain in me. And if you do that, Jesus's promise to you is this. If you remain in him, if you continue to follow him, if you keep your eyes firmly set on him, you will be fruitful. You will be victorious. You will be the hero of the story that God is writing if you remain in Jesus. But the flip side of that is this, is if you don't remain in him, you can do nothing. Not just you can do a little bit, or maybe you can accomplish, you could squeak out, you know, some cool stuff with your life, and you know, maybe people will say you were all right. Uh-uh. He says you can do nothing. And the reason he says that you can do nothing is this. We may look at our, you know, our snapshot of life, you know, 50 to 80 years and say, man, I accomplished a lot in that. Gideon could look at his little snapshot of where his battles were and he could say, wow, look at this amazing thing that I accomplished. But in the 40 years that came after it, all of those achievements were washed away. In the years after he died, his children murdered by their own brother, all of those accomplishments, all of those achievements gone in an instant. Because apart from Jesus, we can do nothing. God's invested in your legacy. He's invested in your story. When you allow him to write you in, when you allow him to write your story, when you allow Jesus to be the hero of your story, your role, your character in that story is incredibly important. And you're written into a story that you know, goes on and surpasses time itself into eternity, rather than writing yourself as the hero of a small little tale that can't change anything. And then ultimately is going to be the story of history repeating itself, of mistakes repeating themselves, of pain repeating itself. God wants to do something amazing and miraculous in your life. God made Gideon's weakness his strength, but Gideon started to thinking that it was his strength. Instead of worshiping God, instead of following God and staying close to God, he began to worship his accomplishments, worship his achievements. And he stepped away from the one who made that stuff happen. And today the question is this. Are you sticking with the one who's done the most miraculous things in your life? You know, there may have been a time where you sat in a church service like this and you raised your hand and said, Chris, I want to follow Jesus because I'm so desperate. I'm going through something and it's painful and it's hard and I don't know what to do and there's this emptiness in me and I want to fill it up and I've tried all of these things and nothing seems to work. And you raised your hand and you said, yes, I want to follow Jesus. And something broke in you, something changed. And all of a sudden, your life started to turn around. Things started to get better. You started to have hope. You started to have joy and things started to become all right. Have you kept your eyes on the one who did that? Or as soon as everything was okay, did you go, okay, I just needed someone to pick me up for a second, but now I'm all right. Now I can walk away from that because I got this. I can do it on my own. Jesus says, listen, I'll pick you up every time. And if you remain in me, I'll keep you up and you're going to do amazing things. But if you don't, you're going to fall the same way over and over and over again. I'd like everybody to bow your heads and close your eyes as we wrap up. This morning, you know, you may be in this room and you may be hearing this and, you know, you recognize that you are one of those people and you're trying to work out life the same way over and over and over again. And, you know, maybe God even brought you out of a terrible situation. God brought you out of the most painful situation of your life. And if you are going to be completely honest with yourself, you can see yourself laying the groundwork for the exact same mistakes. Because while you reached up to grab God's hand to pull you out of it, you let go so that you could make your own way again. And God's saying, listen, take my hand again, remain in me, and we can do this. I will walk you through this. You don't have to worry about your legacy being bad. You don't have to worry about the destruction of those bad relationships or, you know, financial ruin. You don't have to worry about the pain of the mistakes and the sin and the junk that you keep putting on yourself. Because I've got you if you hold on, but you know that you haven't been holding on. Because you just want to fidget, you just want to fix it, you just want to do it on your own. And Jesus is saying this morning, come back to me, stop walking away, remain in me. And you're going to say, Chris, this morning, I haven't remained in Jesus. I've built an altar to my own achievements, I've built an altar to myself, and if I was being honest, I worship myself. If that's you this morning, I want to pray with you. If you know that you need Jesus, you need to remain in him, just right now, where you're at, slip your hand up. So right now, I need to remain in you, Jesus. I keep trying it on my own. Heavenly Father, I thank you for every hand that's lifted in this place. And I thank you that you're moving in hearts and lives today. Lord, it's a real, honest fact that it's easy for us to slip into doing things our own way. God, I have fallen into those things over and over and over again because we just want to be our own boss. We want to rule our own lives. And we want to be the hero of our story. But Jesus, I pray that you'd help us to remember that when you sit in the center of that story, God, that we sit right there next to you. And that what you want to write for us is so much better than we could ever write for ourselves. And so, God, I pray for every single person who lifted their hands, that you would help us to remain in you, Jesus. That you would help us to keep our eyes firmly fixed on you, Lord. And God, I pray that you would help our ears to be tuned in to what you're speaking into our lives. And that as we trust you, you would guide us, that you would guide our steps, that you would give us wisdom to know the right things to do, the right things to say, the right ways to act, God. Because we are saying, God, we are confessing and admitting that like Gideon, we are weak. And we need your strength. We're weak, God, and we need your strength. With every head bowed and every eye closed, one last thing. If you're in this room today and you're not a follower of Jesus, you've never made a decision to say, you know what, I want to follow Jesus with my life. And today you've heard all this, and this is something that you want for yourself. You've been floundering, you've been struggling, you've been hopeless, you've been joyless, and you keep making the same mistakes. Right now, Jesus is giving you the exit ramp. And he's saying, come, walk with me, and I'm going to give you a new life. I'm going to give you a new heart. I'm going to give you a new purpose, and I'm going to change everything. And this morning, if you're ready to say, you know what, Chris, I want to follow Jesus. I'm in for this. Everyone's eyes are closed. We're not going to ask you to do anything embarrassing, but if that's you, just slip your hand up where you're at right now. I want to follow Jesus. It's time. I want to follow Jesus. Thank you. Thank you. God, I pray for those who lifted their hands, and with them, God, I confess that I am a sinner. And I can't do it on my own. And that, Jesus, I need you. I need you to make me right with God. I need you to make me right with myself. And I need you to make me right with others, Lord. Jesus, I'm committing my life to you. I've made a decision to follow you today. Whatever that means, whatever you ask. Because I want to live the best life that I possibly can. So, Jesus, forgive me. Change me. God, I thank you for what you're doing in the hearts and lives of the people here in this church. And I thank you that you are a God who changes lives and who empowers his people to live as the heroes, not of our own story, but of the story that you are writing. Jesus, we love you and pray all of this in your wonderful name. Amen.
Thank you for joining us at Compass. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions about Compass or this message, contact us at our website, www.compassbn.com.